I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. Do you re-dance to the music that we can't hear?
I love it. It's good. I got it in my head.
I would sing it, but I'm not going to because, as you know, I'm pretty tone deaf. So I don't want to upset her.
As long as you can hear the music in your head. That's all you need.
Yeah, definitely. So what is your chat this week, Emma? What is your true crime chat?
So I was watching, I've watched the first one of Murder Island, which is actually the thing that people sent to us and suggested that we applied for.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad we didn't. do you know what? It's good. So what it is, for anyone that doesn't know, it is a competition, I'm guessing. Is that really? Right. Yeah, it's a competition. And it's based on a fictional murder written by the crime author Ian Rankin, Scottish author, and there are amateur couples of people who are amateurs who are not in the crime community. They're not police, they're not forensics, you know, they're nothing to do with it, and they have a go at being detectives on the case. And so it's pretty comprehensive. They've got an island, they've got different people on the island who are obviously actors, they've got crime scenes, they've got evidence, they get to interview people and all that kind of stuff. And I do think it's really well done in some ways, but I think it's really annoying in others. So, like you're watching them and, you know, there's one of the couples, these two girls, and they're standing in the blood. Like they walk directly through the blood in the crime scene and then like trample it about and stuff. And you just want to scream at the TV each. Like,
and the not deliberately. Stuff.
Not deliberately, no.
Okay. So they're not just trying to be.
No. No. And there's other bits where there's like the little yellow evidence markers, and it basically says you can touch anything else, but don't touch the things that have that next to them. Mm-hmm. And these two older ladies are like picking them up and looking at them. And oh my God, it's really frustrating to watch if you're into true crime, but some of them are quite good at certain parts. Mm-hmm. So there's a girl that I think she studied criminology at uni and then ended up taking a different career path, and she's pretty good at like the interviews.
Okay.
But yeah, the only thing I would say is go in with an open mind, because it's a wee bit cheesy. The fact that it's fictional, you know they're actors, so it's harder to take that as seriously. It feels a bit like a murder mystery. And like there's the woman that plays the character that's been murdered. She kind of does a little bit at the start, and it's like, and who's that in the body bag? That's me. It's all like a bit dramatic.
Oh.
So I would, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. It is what it is. You know, they're not real detectives. It's not a real murder. It is a bit of fun. Right. Still recommend watching it. And, but yeah, so that's what I've been watching. So kind of mixed review, I would say. Mixed review.
Okay. So it's probably not going to be at the top of my watch list, but I might get around to it.
Yeah, it's fun. I think actually makes me want to apply to go on it though, because like we could
show them how it's done.
I'm like, ugh, rookies.
Amazing.
So yeah, how about you? Anything you've been watching or listening to?
Nothing really. I have just been enjoying the old dramas and stuff that come on the telly in autumn. You know, you gotta love them. All the good programming that comes on in the autumn, winter, love it. So yeah, I haven't been doing anything true crime. I think we both watched that Vigil.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, we watched that. But other than that, no, not so much.
Awesome. So, what case have you got for us this week?
All right. So my case this week, Emma. Tell me if you've heard about it. I hadn't, and it sounds like actually a lot of people do know about it, so I won't be surprised if you do. My episode this week is about Helen Fiona Torbett.
The name rings a bell. I can't remember, though.
So her maiden name is Graham, just for reference, because it does come up. So Helen Fiona Torbett, formerly Graham, was 62 years old, retired, and a keen musician, yachtmaster, skier, and hillwalker. She married husband Dr. Thomas Torbett, a gynecological consultant, in August 1960, and a few years later they had one son named Alistair. In 1967 they moved to Busby in East Renfrewshire. Apparently, I think that's near Clarkston and Newton Mearns, just to give you a bit of a visual there. And there they remained until Helen disappeared in July 1993 while on a hillwalking holiday in the village of Inverinet, Kintail in Kyle of Lochalsh. Okay.
Yep.
If you're wondering where that is, Wikipedia defines it as the Kyle of Lochalsh from the Gaelic Kyle Lochalsh, I think is the pronunciation. I really have no idea, so I apologise to anyone who actually speaks Gaelic. It basically means Strait of the Foaming Loch. It's a village in the historic county of Ross-shire on the northwest coast of Scotland, located around 55 miles, 90 kilometres, west-southwest of Inverness. It's located...
You go there to get to Skye, don't you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I've been there.
Right.
It's lovely.
So it says it's located on the Loch Alsh Peninsula at the entrance to Loch Alsh or Loch Alsh, opposite the village of Kyleakin on the Isle of Skye. So a ferry used to connect the two villages until it was replaced by the Skye Bridge about a mile to the west in 1995. So just to give you kind of geographical idea where it is. So Fiona had climbed all of the Munros in Scotland. So for anyone who doesn't know, Munros are a type of hill in Scotland. So we have lots of different types of hills and they all have different names and references. Munros are the highest, I believe.
So they are all...
like over 2,500 feet.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So a Munro, the classification for Munro is based on the height of it.
Yeah.
So there's all different types of hills, like you said. But yeah, people do Munro bagging, and that just means that they go around and they climb them, and then climb that's all off their list.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
So that does kind of form part of the story. So basically, I apologise for being useless because I don't really do hill walking. In fact, they don't really do it. I don't do hill walking, so I don't know a lot about this stuff. However, Fiona had climbed all of the Munros in Scotland, and she co-authored a book on a range of hills in Scotland named The Grahams with Alan Dawson after its publication in The Great Outdoors. So apparently this man Dawson, he'd previously published information on Scotland's hills in the Relative Hills of Britain in 1992. Now, in that publication, he'd referred to the smaller hills as LCs, Lesser Corbetts. Whilst in hospital recovering from a skiing accident, also in 1992, Fiona Torbett put together a similar list on the information that she had gathered over the years. Then Dawson and Torbett basically combined their list and a new classification was given. So the range of hills that was previously known as the LCs was renamed the Grahams, which is Fiona Torbett's maiden name, and it's still known as such to this day. Now, it was basically, she gave it more of a definition than what Alan Dawson had previously. So Wikipedia defines a Graham as a hill between 2,000 feet, which is about 609 metres, and 2,500 feet, 762 metres, with a drop of 150 metres or more on all sides. So that's what a Graham is, and that's named after her.
So they must be the ones just under Munros then.
Yes, so I think you've got Munros, Corbetts, mm-hmm. and and they were previously known as Lesser Corbetts or LCs, and they've been renamed as Grahams. So I think it might be Munro, Corbetts, and Grahams.
She sounds such a fit and fascinating person, doesn't she?
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. So a Graham, it's named after her. That's that was her maiden name. So she'd been walking in the hills of Scotland for many years up until her disappearance in 1993. And she'd been staying at, and I again apologise because I don't know Gaelic, at a place called the Greenan House Bed and Breakfast in Inverinight for around 6 years. Now, Fiona apparently considered this B&B as a home from home, and she got on really well with the small family that ran it. It was a husband and wife, Zina and Donald, and their son, who's also named Donald, who lived in a caravan next to the house. Now, in July 1993, Fiona made her way to Wester Ross by car for another solitary hill walking adventure, and she arrived, I believe, on the 6th of July. Now, at that time, her son was fully grown, he was around 31 years of age, and her husband was on a sailing trip, having just retired 3 days earlier from the Southern General Hospital in Glasgow. So she made her way on her own for her hill walking trip, which I believe was her hobby. It's, you know, she often went alone, it was her thing.
I'm always amazed by people that go and do that, are you not? Like,
oh yeah,
cycling holidays by themselves or walking absolutely holidays by themselves. I mean, I don't have enough faith in myself and my survival skills. I would be that person that would be found at the bottom of a ravine, like, yeah,
all the food supplies yeah gone.
All the food supplies gone, crying, like, wanting a hot
waving
water
a flag
bottle.
Yeah, come and save me.
I know, and they're like, you've only been missing an hour. You've literally just fallen down there. Like, there's nothing wrong with you. You've twisted your ankle. Get up.
You haven't even started on the trail yet. Yeah.
You can see your car, Emma.
You're still in the car park. Yeah, exactly. That
yeah,
would be.
Mega kudos to these people.
Yeah.
I've got a friend that does a lot of hill walking, and I want to go with her because I feel like if anyone can help me get up and down a hill, it was going to be her.
The truth is, I would actually really enjoy it. And I do enjoy it in the times that I've been in the past. But I would just, like you, I would need to piggyback with someone that is good at it or knows what they're doing, that I could do it with. Because, yeah, I just don't have the knowledge.
It is treacherous. Yeah. I think people frequently underestimate Mother Nature generally. But mm-hmm. especially with hill walking and things like that. Like, it is super, super dangerous. It takes one yeah. slip.
Yeah.
One, you know, moment where your concentration goes. And
absolutely.
You could literally fall down a mountain. And, yeah. Not,
100%.
Not worth it.
Especially if you're on your own in a really isolated spot. Like you say, something small happens and you're lying mangled in a heap and you just have to wait for somebody to realise that you're missing or come across you.
I know. And that's the thing, if they don't find you in Scotland, you can die of exposure really quickly.
Yes.
So, I always get a bit nervous when I see people hiking, and especially in Scotland, people go up Ben Nevis, which is the highest mountain in the UK, in Scotland, sorry. And they're going up in like bogs and a t-shirt and trousers, maybe jeans even, I've seen people in, like pair of trainers that don't have any grips on them. They don't have water, they don't have snacks. And you're like, what are you doing? What are yeah. you doing? Like, and those are the same people that go on TripAdvisor and moan that there's not a cafe at the top.
Yeah. I agree.
Oh, God. But yeah, so it sounds like she knew what she was doing anyway. I would have gone with her.
Absolutely. I would 100% go with someone like her. She knew what she was doing. She knew where she was going. She knew the terrain. Yeah, so experienced hill walker, I think you could easily say. So the guest house where Fiona visited was usually run by Zina and her husband, Donald. With her son Donald Jr. helping around the house and garden. This time, however, Zina and Donald were actually in Aberdeen, and the guest house was being run by Donald Jr., aged 31. Now, it seems as though Fiona Torbett was the only guest staying at the guest house at this time.
So it was just her and him?
Right. So okay. Fiona was meticulous at documenting, and she wrote in her diary every day, as well as taking detailed notes of the hills that she walked and the observations that she made along the way. Now, apparently she also corrected Ordnance survey maps as well. Like,
wow.
this woman is clever. I mean, this woman is...
I can't
is...
even read those.
Exactly. I don't even know what the hell an Order Survey map is. Never mind correcting it.
Are they not the ones with all the wiggly lines?
Yeah, no, I was joking.
Yeah. Oh, I don't really know. I'm literally guessing. Are those the ones with the wiggly lines?
I think it sort of tells you about elevation and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm guessing. But yeah, anyway, she's a smart lady. So... So she would take meticulous notes about the hills that she walked, the observations that she made, even things, Emma, like the birds, the trees, the plants, and everything as well, which I think is just lovely. So it sounds like she really absorbed her surroundings, which, yeah, I just think is really nice. So her last diary entry, believed to have been made on the 6th of July, noted her embarrassment at returning from hill walking to a strange letter from Donald Macmillan, the son that was running the guest house at the time. Now, the letter has never been recovered. Okay.
This gives me the ick.
So, Fiona was not seen or heard from after the 7th of July 1993. Fiona's Volkswagen Golf remained parked at the guest house, and shortly after returning from a sailing trip, Thomas Torbett raised the alarm and notified police that his wife was missing. Now, when interviewed by the police, Donald Macmillan stated that Fiona Torbett had met another man and the two had driven away together in a dark-coloured vehicle, leaving Fiona's car behind. Donald claimed that Fiona had confirmed she would return for it in a few days' time, but Fiona's belongings were missing and her car was eventually taken to a police impound near East Kilbride. Now, searches were carried out by police and search and rescue teams, fearing that Fiona had lost her life in the hills which she had walked in and meticulously mapped for many years. As time passed, no trace of her was found until 10 months later. Were you going to ask something?
Yeah. So the diary, they said all their personal belongings were gone. When did they, or where did they find the diary?
They found it laterally.
Okay.
So, in March 1994, a woman named Muriel McKenzie from Glasgow was on holiday in the area and came across some women's clothing in some undergrowth. Mrs. McKenzie alerted a forestry worker to the find, who subsequently notified police. The belongings were found beneath willow trees on the Kyle to Invernate Road, approximately 200 yards from the Green and Guest House, and they included Mrs. Torbett's handbag, purse, bank cards, her hill walking bag, and a single slipper. Fiona's large holdall wasn't uncovered with the rest of the belongings, and as a result of the find, the case changed status from a missing persons inquiry to the hunt for a body. Now, at the time, the Herald reported, in one of the biggest searches mounted in the Highlands, a helicopter was hired to take aerial photographs of the entire area. The Royal Navy was called in to advise on searching Loch Duich. A team of police divers was brought in, and other policemen scoured the mountain terrain. The investigation team, now convinced Mrs. Torbett was dead, decided first to search the guest house itself. At the same time, ground radar, similar to the equipment used to uncover bodies in the Cromwell Street investigation in Gloucester, was brought in. I'm assuming you know that Cromwell Street was Fred and Rose West.
Yes, but they also used that to find, the King in the car park.
No, I didn't know.
Richard III. So there was an old graveyard that was actually at some point over the years turned into a car park and cemented over and all that, concreted over and all that kind of stuff.
Oh my god.
And then it's in Leicester, and in 2012 they found, so they had worked out that that's where the burial site might be, and they used that kind of ground penetrating radar to work out, and they found him. And I'm pretty sure it's Richard III.
Wow.
Based on bone abnormalities and things like that.
How crazy that they just...
There's documentaries on it, if anyone fancies it. Just Google Richard III body in the car park, I'm pretty sure, is what it's called.
So, that seems really interesting.
Yeah,
it's strange.
I know.
It seems strange that they wouldn't have known that and just went ahead and cemented over. Yeah, it's so weird. Bizarre. So anyway, so yeah, so similar stuff that they can, you know, scan the ground before they actually start digging anything. Mm-hmm. So that was brought in. On entering the guest house, the team found to their horror it had been extensively redecorated and recarpeted. 12 hours into the search, during which time the team had even opened blocked up chimneys, they had still found nothing. Then, in a downstairs shower room, officers lifted floorboards in a cupboard and found, well hidden, the missing holdall with Mrs. Torbett's name printed on the handles. Other materials found in a plastic bag included a slipper which matched the one found by the roadside. Donald McMillan was arrested on suspicion of murder and questioned by police. However, he failed to cooperate. It was only after seeing his parents, who pleaded for him to assist police with their investigation, that he provided information on where Fiona Torbett's remains were located. Fiona Torbett had been buried in the back garden of the guest house by a woodpile in a shallow grave. She was bound with tape and her head was wrapped in bandages. In a sickening revelation, it was discovered that police had taken aerial photographs in the initial search for Fiona. One photograph showed Donald McMillan standing on the woodpile exactly where Fiona Torbett lay. Which is just horrific.
That's disgusting.
It is, isn't it? Police carried out a search of McMillan's caravan and found that he had an obsession with older women. It was reported that he had corresponded with older women in the area and claimed to wear women's underwear. Police reported that pornographic material was found in their search which rated older women highly. They deemed that the murder was sexually motivated.
See, as soon as you told me that it was him running it and just her there, and then obviously the letter,
yeah,
that just totally creeped me out.
Yeah.
Red flag, big red flag.
So it was later established that McMillan had bound and gagged Fiona Torbett and cut her nightdress with the intent of raping her. She ultimately died of asphyxiation at the hands of her killer as he attempted to sexually assault her. A scene of crime investigator received samples of the tape used to bind Fiona following her post-mortem examination, and from this he was able to lift fingerprints. The prints matched Donald McMillan. The black bin bags, also used to conceal Fiona's belongings both in and outside the house, were a match. Fiona's killer was found guilty by a majority verdict in September 1994 at the High Court in Inverness and ordered by Lord Cowie to serve life in prison along with 5 years for attempting to defeat the ends of justice. In February 2003, he appeared in court again for a sentence to be reviewed following the revision of human rights legislation. It was deemed that 15 years in prison was appropriate for Fiona's murder. In February 2007, he was found dead in his cell at Sockton Prison, Edinburgh. It is believed he died of natural causes. He was 45 years of age. Fiona's son, Alistair, was working in Manchester at the time of her death, but recalled hill walking with her in Luss around 3 months before she disappeared. He said she had expressed contentment at having a family and the love of her husband. Neither her husband or son ever believed the story of her running off with another man. Fiona's husband found the loss particularly difficult to deal with, stating that they had been very close. Following the discovery of Fiona's remains, they were able to give her a proper burial, but her son reported that the ordeal had essentially ruined his father's life. And that is the sad case of Helen Fiona Torbett, N.E.E. Graham.
Yeah. I think, once again, you know, it's a little bit like the people who get found, you know, yards away from their house. It's that same vibe with him having just retired and, like, them hopefully going to be able to spend time together. And, you know, it just reminds you that life is so short and, you know, you don't know what's around the corner.
Absolutely. So,
it's really, really sad. She sounds like she was a fascinating person. I am not surprised by that man. I don't know, just the letter and everything. Just the thing that gets me is why so many of these men that murder women for sexual reasons, like, why they feel entitled to that? Why they feel that they can just take that and take someone's life, and it's all about self-preservation, isn't it? It's that's what I want, that's what I'm going to get, and then I'm going to hide it so I don't get in mm-hmm. trouble. They don't see yeah. them as a person. They see them as a means of gratifying themselves.
Absolutely.
It's horrible. It's just horrible. But, oh well, he's dead. At least he can't do it to anyone else. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's hope it was a agonising death in the cell for him.
Yeah, it's a shame that he died before he served his full sentence as well.
Yeah, I hate that.
You know, it feels like, you know, you've sort of been cheated in a way. Yeah. And she obviously, you know, contributed so much.
Mm-hmm.
She was a really valuable person. And I can imagine that the loss must be
immense, yeah.
For her husband and son, without a doubt.
I think also that's the other thing that I hate when they lie about it. So I was listening to some Court Junkie episodes when I was driving the weekend, and the one that I was listening to, basically the woman's estranged husband murdered her, and he made up lies again about her going off with a guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, she was seeing all these guys, she was probably off with one of them, and he'd murdered her. And not only that, he'd murdered her and dismembered her and buried her on family property, and he point blank, blatantly barefaced lied to officers and tried to claim that she was, you know, sleeping around and probably away with some bloke and had just abandoned her son.
Just it's common.
How callous, yeah, how yeah. callous they are.
It's often the reason that you hear, you know, given by men whose wives are missing, when usually when they've murdered them, is, oh yeah, she ran off with someone else, you know, another man. You know, she was sleeping around.
And they know full well where she is.
Absolutely.
And that's like a power thing as well, isn't it, for a lot of people?
Definitely.
Knowing where they are.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, no, it did ring a bell once she started talking about the hill whopping, but I couldn't remember where she was found. I just knew it was something to do with the B&B, and then as soon as you said the young son, I was like,
Yeah, it wasn't a case that I'd heard of before, to be honest, so I found it a very strange... But yeah, and also very sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so hopefully you have got a light-hearted true crime fact, tidbit or story for us to end on a lighter note.
Yeah, I decided to go for another Florida Man one because it's just the gift that keeps on giving. So, Florida Man arrested for allegedly throwing live alligator into a Wendy's drive-thru window.
What?!
Joshua James was arrested after, I don't know why they keep saying allegedly, because there's video footage of it. He threw a 3.5-foot live alligator through the Wendy's drive-thru window.
What
he pulled up, he got his drink from the employee, and then it seems like he didn't pay either, by the way. He threw the reptile in instead, which, not cool. We don't throw live animals at people.
No.
Those are beings. Let's not do that. But yeah, so he picked up along the side of the road and thought it would be funny.
Oh my God.
I mean, let's just get this out there. Pranks aren't funny. They're not. They're just not funny. I'm sorry. No. I hate people that are like, oh, I'm just such a jokester. I'm such a prankster. And it's always stuff that they do that hurts other people or upsets other people or embarrasses other people. Yep. And you know what? You're not funny. You're an asshole. Stop it.
It comes at the cost of someone.
Yeah, like that's my PSA for the day.
The only funny pranks and jokes like that are the ones that don't hurt anyone.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
Yeah,
never got it.
I agree.
So he was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Good.
But the alligator is classed as a deadly weapon. How fun is that?
I like it.
Illegally killing, possessing or capturing an alligator, I'm guessing they're all lumped into one, and second degree larceny, petty theft, which must be for the drink.
Because he didn't pay for his drink.
Yeah.
I love how they just threw that one in as well.
I know. They're well like, done. You know what? Screw you.
Let's just throw the book at you.
So his mum went on TV and said, it was just a stupid prank that he did that's now turning into this. It's stupid. He's a prankster. He does stuff like this because he thinks it's
fuck
funny.
Oh, fuck off. Don't justify his behaviour.
I know. Enabler.
Excuse me,
she's
mother.
Enabled this behavior.
Enabler, yeah, and you continue to enable it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. Yeah, that pissed me off. I was just like, wow, I wonder why he thinks he can get away with these things.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing as his own mother is like, God, it's just a joke.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
No. Please don't enable your children to do these types of things, people.
Yeah. And I'm not like shaming anyone. I don't do body shaming or look shaming, but he kind of looks like you'd expect.
Yeah, he does. He
nothing going like on behind the eyes.
A bit like a Chad?
Yeah, he looks like a Chad. But like, you know, nothing behind the eyes.
Yeah.
Zero. Lights are on, no one's home. So yeah, ridiculous. But they actually tracked him down during the CCTV and he totally admitted to it and was just like, yeah, that was funny. Basically.
I mean, yeah, did he think that he was going to get away with it?
I don't know.
Just from the CCTV and stuff. They must have snapped him on camera.
Oh.
They made a snappy arrest.
I was going to say something about, you know, see you later, alligator. But I couldn't think anything. I'm sure you've got some good ones. Yeah, I don't know. I like alligators. I feel bad for them. I think it's a shame.
Yeah, like you say,
you've been so confused.
It's a living being.
Imagine. One minute you're by the side of the road, next thing you're in a Wendy's, someone's just swapped you for a drink.
Yeah, just don't. Just don't.
Also, alligators are worth quite a bit, so he actually overpaid for the drink, I would argue.
I bet the clerk didn't see it that way.
No, that's true. Can you imagine? Can you imagine someone flinging an alligator? You're like, I'm not paid enough for this.
I know. Yeah, that is exactly what I would think. I am not paid enough for this, definitely.
Do you know what, though? It's always like, you know, minimum wage customer service or retail jobs that kind of shit happens at. Like,
absolutely.
If anyone's ever worked in a bar or a takeaway place or a restaurant or anything, those are always the places where mad stuff happens, like proper mad stuff. And you know what? After a while, you're just like, oh, of course someone's throwing an alligator at me. Like, why wouldn't they? You know, just another day being me in my life.
Absolutely.
And then you grow up and you start working at regular places and you forget all the mad mental stuff that happened. But yeah, no, especially in Scotland, like I worked in a pub and loads of crazy stuff happened and we had tribute acts that came in and like once there was like a brawl that broke out between two of the tribute acts. So there's like people, I can't remember who they were dressed as, say it was like Elvis and like Prince. We're like fighting with each other. I was just standing there, and then it was the same place that we had to do like a dance on the bar, but not like Coyote Ugly Sexy, like cheesy. It was like the Macarena kind of thing. So we're like, the song was on, we're all doing like the Macarena on the bar, and these two are like punching the crap out of each other. It was very odd,
ridiculous.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. You can actually leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Just a few people are saying they can't leave them on Podbean, so you can always do it on there. Just a little FYI. If you want to get in contact with us, you can email us. It's info@murdershespoke.net. We're also on social media. You can get in contact with us there. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just look for Murder She Spoke Podcast. All right. Thanks so much, and we'll see you in a week. Bye.